Come to the feast. Living in the world that you and I reside in, we may not fully appreciate the anger of the man who prepared a great feast, sent out invitations, and then on the day of the feast, when all was ready, began to hear excuses from his friends who suddenly decided not to come. After all, the excuses that were given were perfectly good excuses. Why get so upset? Shouldn't the man who prepared the feast be able to understand? If you had just bought a field, you might want to see if it were full of weeds and had good soil. And you would want to go inspect it to see what the potential was for a good crop. Your whole income might depend on that field. Or if you had bought 5 pair of oxen, a $30,000 tractor, if you will, you might want to try that tractor out to see if the motor worked properly and that you didn't get a lemon. Or if you had just gotten married, wouldn't you think that you could be excused from the feast to go on your honeymoon? Why would someone who had prepared a feast be so disturbed by your excuses, particularly if your excuses were reasonable? I think you have to understand the situation and the time in which Jesus told this story to appreciate that man's anger. You need to see the whole picture to understand why these excuses are not reasonable excuses. We live in an age in which refrigeration is common, a modern convenience that did not exist when Jesus lived. In small rural communities around Nazareth, the welfare of all the families in each community was dependent upon the complete concern of each family in that community for each other. Their survival and their best use of their meager resources might depend upon their mutual cooperation. If one family decided to have a celebration and to slaughter a large animal for a feast, the meat from that animal would be more than one family could consume in one sitting. Without help from friends in the community, a lot of meat would be left over. Without refrigeration, that meat would spoil and go to waste. So an invitation to a feast was not a frivolous invitation, particularly an invitation to a large feast. So a family in a village would announce in advance when the fatted calf was to be slaughtered, so that all families could cooperate. In effect, they said to each other, "I will help you consume your feast if you will help me consume mine." That way, the village could survive, and each family received the maximum benefit from a village resource. To slaughter, butcher, cook, season, and consume a large animal or several animals takes much preparation. And therefore, in the time that Jesus lived, no one without refrigeration would prepare a big feast without first making sure that their friends would be free to come on the day of the feast. With this information as background, we can appreciate better the anger of the man who notified his friends in advance of the feast and had been assured of their help in eating the food, and then on the day of the feast to hear his friends making excuses not to come. Not only would such a man be upset by the broken promises and by the insult to his invitation, but also by the effect such excuses would make on the whole village and its resources. There's nothing worse than the smell of spoiled meat. Without refrigeration, leftover meat is a disaster. In that situation, what normally is a good excuse is no longer valid. The consumption of the feast must supersede inspecting a field, trying out a team of oxen, or going on a honeymoon. The survival of the village and the best use of its resources are more important than individual plans. The story that Jesus told applies to you and to me. He invites us to his feast. He tells us in advance that he is throwing a big party, and he wants us to come and help him celebrate and consume the food, all of it, so that it doesn't spoil. Let me tell you how this story applies to me, and perhaps it may apply to you. The obvious answer to why the friends of the rich man didn't accept the invitation to the feast is that they did not want to go. I have been an acquaintance of Jesus most of my life. I have known who he is, and I've read about him, and I have received many invitations to come to his feast, but I've not wanted to go. And I have given good excuses, valid, reasonable excuses. But I've been somewhat irked that Jesus says, "Okay, if you don't want to come as an acquaintance of mine, I will invite the beggar, the lame, the blind, and the crippled, because it is urgent that my feast be consumed." Why didn't I accept the invitation a long time ago? It wasn't until I ceased being an acquaintance of Jesus and realized that I am a beggar, crippled, lame, and blind, unable to pay him back, that I was free to come to his feast. The problem for me, and perhaps for you, was partly myself and partly my inability to hear, to listen to what the invitation really was. When the servant gave the invitation to me, I thought I heard the servant say, "If you come to the feast, you must go out and tell others to come." And I was afraid. I told the servant, "I'm sorry, I'm just not good at talking to people. I would be glad to work, but don't expect me to tell others about the feast. I don't know what is on the menu, and I'm so scared of what people will think if I say the wrong thing that I don't even want to find out." And so I excused myself. The servant came to me another time with an invitation, and I thought I heard the servant say, "Please come to the feast at the church." And I thought of all those people who I know who cheated on their income tax forms, who mouthed beautiful words for 1 hour on Sunday, but who ignored my needs throughout the week, who yelled at each other all the way to church in the car, and then stepped out of the car with such beautiful smiles and honeyed words. And I said to the servant, "I'm sorry, I don't want to come to that feast. I just don't like to be associated with people who are hypocrites and tell white lies." Then the servant came to me with another invitation, and I thought I heard the servant say, "Please come to the feast, but when you come, there are certain rules that you must obey. First, you must wash yourself and clean yourself up. And then you must dress in formal attire. And when you come to the feast, we will hand you a program and a schedule to follow. We don't have a lot of rules, just 10 commandments. And I didn't want to wash up, and I didn't like the rules. They destroyed my fun and made me feel guilty. I replied to the servant, "I'm sorry, but I don't have a formal outfit. I like being informal. You will have to excuse me. Your feast costs too much." And still a servant came and invited me again to the feast. And I thought I heard the servant say, "The feast is beautiful, and when you come, you must bring a gift called a tithe to help pay for it." But I'd already planned to use that money to buy a car, to take a vacation trip, to get a camera and some new clothes. So I told the servant, "I'm sorry. That feast sounds very worthwhile to attend, but I promised to help my neighbor, mow his lawn, and I'm just terribly busy. You know how it is." The servant didn't give up, and I received another invitation. I thought I heard the servant say, "You are invited to the feast, and because you are an acquaintance of Jesus, he is counting on you to give some help at the feast. He needs you to wash the dishes and to help with the drama program. Since you are an acquaintance, you won't mind sacrificing your time and talent for his sake, will you?" I excused myself and I said, I don't like sacrificing, and washing dishes is not my thing. I sometimes can juggle, but drama just isn't for me. Jesus would not expect me to do something that I'm not trained to do, would he? I'm sorry, but I just cannot come. I promised to help Carol Hinderly pull weeds in front of Chalet 10. I could tell you many more invitations that I have received from the servant who invited me to the feast offered by Christ. And every time I thought I heard in the invitation something that made me give reasonable and valid excuses as to why I could not attend. I didn't always tell the real truth in the excuses, but they were good excuses, and they were good reasons. Just as an example, some of them went like this. I'm sorry, but I just don't want to owe Jesus anything. Or, I'm sorry, I really blew it yesterday, and I'm just not good enough to come to the feast. Or, you will have to excuse me. I had planned a party, and to put it bluntly, your feast just does not sound like any fun. Or, I'm looking for freedom, and there's just no joy in what you offer. Today I want to confess to you that I am a beggar, lame in my excuses, blind in insight, and crippled between the ears, totally deaf. The servant I was listening to was the devil, and the servant who invited me to the feast that Christ offered never put any conditions on his invitation. I discovered that the feast that Christ invited me to attend is right where I am each moment of my life, and his feast for you is right where you are in your life. I did not need to make any excuses that I could not go because I was too busy, because no matter where I go or what I do, the feast is already there. I discovered that Christ's feast is full of joy and fun, of adventure and excitement. To come to Christ's feast, there are no conditions for me to clean up, to wash my hands, to do anything that I don't want to do. Everything is totally voluntary. I can be myself and give as much as I want to give, or nothing at all. I don't have to know what's on the menu or dress formally, and I'm so excited to learn that I don't have to tell you about Christ's feast, that here I am telling you all about it. Because I'm not required to give any gift, I am discovering that I'm free to give more than a tithe because I want to give. And I'm giving money, talents, time that God gives me to share at Christ's feast. I don't have to provide it. And what is even more wonderful is that I'm now down to two commandments, both of which are positive, and which say the same thing in different words. The good news is that the feast is not just on Sunday in a church, which I go to gladly now, but it is right now, on a Thursday evening. Every day of the week, every moment, wherever you are, Christ invites you to a celebration, to eat the bread of life, to consume it all. It is urgent that you come to the feast, because unless you come, the food will spoil. Christ is no good unless he is eaten, so that you can live. The invitation is not only to acquaintances, but to the lame, to beggars, to the blind, and the cripples, and to all those who are hiding behind the hedges and in the alleyways. There is not one of us that does not fit one of these categories. It is an open invitation. I hope that you will come to the feast and that you will hear the true invitation and realize that none of your excuses are reasonable or valid. Amen. I'm going to ask the children from Narnia if they take a piece and wait until everyone is served before you begin to eat. And I'll give you the signal. It's okay if you've already started eating. You have that freedom. Okay, don't worry about it. But perhaps some of you would like to wait and make sure everybody has a piece so that we can share. Shall we pray? Father, this is the feast of Christ, the bread of life that you have given to us. It is for beggars, the blind, cripples, and the lame, all those people who are hiding. We confess that we are one of these. Help each of us to recognize the true invitation that Christ's feast is a free gift with no conditions attached. Now in silent prayer, let us eat the bread of life, each of us offering our own prayers of thanks and dedication. Let's eat the bread of life, God given for you. Eat it in remembrance of him.